The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with John Couch on the other side of the glass. John engineering and producing our show as we get things rolling on this Tuesday afternoon as we get ready to pretty much close the books on July. It's the 30th of July, 2019. Had some rumbling up at our house last night, maybe a few drops of rain, but still, we're calling it two rain, I guess you could call it glorified showers, since the summer thunderstorm season started up at our place. When I say showers, lasting maybe about 30 minutes each, so still waiting for kind of that signature monsoon storm. I hope there won't be one like last year with a microburst over our house where we lost a tree. So you got to be very careful what you wish for when it comes to the rainy season. You're listening to 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted local news talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website. We try to make sure all of our programs are put up in a very timely manner. My assistant, Rosemary Brandt, usually gets them up, certainly by late afternoon. They're up there at buckmastershow.com. And, of course, there's live streaming at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. All of that available at buckmastershow.com. The live line number 790-2040. If there's anything on your mind, any questions or comments you have during the hour, we would welcome your input. Let's get right to the live line. Dave Wells, Dr. Wells, PhD, Research Director at the nonprofit, nonpartisan, the Grand Canyon Institute up in Phoenix, is with us on the live line. Dr. Wells, Dave, how are you?
Oh, glad to join you, and I'm sort of hoping for some rain, too.
Have you had any in the Phoenix area?
We got a little bit of showers, maybe for half an hour, about a week or so ago, but not heavy, and so certainly not very much.
Well, this is certainly the monsoon that some are calling the nonsoon.
Yes.
Dave, I want to explore a little bit this research that you've done and the study you did. There was a lot of concern when the higher minimum wage went into effect here in Arizona in January, I believe, 2017, about job losses. Has that materialized?
We're not finding any evidence of it. I mean, of course, the economy is strong, but what we did is we thought a good comparison that was pretty simple would be to look at what happened in Arizona compared to Nevada and Utah, because Nevada and Utah both have similar kind of growth rates and similar population growth rates as Arizona, but they didn't change their minimum wage. They both basically follow the federal minimum wage, which is $7.25 an hour, whereas Arizona went from an $8.05 minimum wage to, during my study period, to $10.50, currently it's $11 an hour. And we didn't find any indication that employment growth was any different, just in the food service sector, that's all I looked at, in Arizona compared to Utah and Nevada.
Why don't you go over some of these key findings, beginning with the food service incomes, Dave?
Well, we found that their hourly wages in Arizona went up 19%. This is comparing 2016, before the initiative went into place, compared to 2018, so 2 years later. And that was only compared to a 3% increase in wages in Nevada and Utah combined. Incomes were a little bit smaller. The income increase was about 14% in Arizona and about 6% in Nevada and Utah combined. That comes from a slightly different survey, which doesn't measure all the food service workers. And from that, we're assuming there's a possibility that the hourly work amount went down by about an hour a week in Arizona.
So did the restaurants absorb these wage increases by simply raising prices? And has that had any kind of ripple effect that you were able to determine with people not going out to eat as much?
Well, the economy is pretty good. So for the most part, I don't think higher prices have impacted the demand at the restaurants too much. And on the flip side, also the prices aren't going to go up tremendously. People may have noticed immediately after the initiative passed and went into place in January of 2017 that the prices may have gone up. A lot of restaurants want to get ahead of that. But on the flip side, at fast food restaurants, for instance, labor costs are only 1/4 of all of their costs. So the amount of actual inflationary pressure caused by the minimum wage, even though it's gone up by about 30%, isn't significant in terms of overall price increases at fast food restaurants. And, of course, that's only one place that people spend their money.
You've talked about some of the side benefits of a higher minimum wage, Dave Wells, Dr. Wells. What are some of those side benefits that you discovered in your research?
Yeah, this was sort of the more interesting things. And these aren't from, this isn't Arizona data, this is national data. But a couple of things that really sort of stood out. One was suicide rates going down. There were economists at the University of California, Berkeley, who looked at the impact of a higher minimum wage, as well as the American Journal of Preventive Medicine also did a separate report, and they both found a decrease in the suicide rate. The Berkeley scholars did not find it affected opioid rate issues, but they did see a decrease in suicides by about 2% for a dollar increase in the minimum wage. And what we roughly estimate is that if that in fact plays itself out over the next 10 years, that means about 500 lives in Arizona, actually more than that, but at least 500 lives could be saved, which is, you know, a significant thing. It's one of those things that it's a hypothetical in the sense you can't actually know whose lives were saved, but that's certainly a great impact for those people who are helped by it. The other one that was intriguing is a couple economists from Rutgers and Clemson University have a working paper out looking at the impact on reincarceration rates. Because one of the great challenges we have are people who have been imprisoned and then they try to move back into society, and a lot of them are not successful at that. So in Arizona, over about 3 years, about 40% of people end up back in prison. And their study suggests that that there's a possibility that the higher minimum wage that Arizona will have will actually decrease that from about 40% to about 33%, which is a pretty significant change. And we'll have to just sort of watch the data to see if, in fact, we do see a decrease in our recidivism rate, because obviously people coming out of prison have a whole bunch of other challenges they face, not only the substance abuse issues, but also the challenge of simply finding housing and employment just because they have a felony on their record.
Was there a reduction in the levels of debt?
Yes, there's also people who have a decrease in debt as well as better access to credit, which makes some sense because a lot of this money can then be used to pay down debt, and it also makes people in a better position to actually access credit. And so those are also really positive things. And we also found that that if Arizona were to adopt something like an earned income tax credit, that would also be an overall benefit to folks.
Have you taken a look at the Congressional Budget Office, the CBO, releasing its scorecard on a Democratic proposal to raise the federal minimum wage from the present $7.25 an hour to $15 an hour by 2025? Have you taken a look at that?
Yes, we did, because when we did our first analysis of the proposition in 2016, we relied on the Congressional Budget Office as a way of developing a methodology for it. So they potentially put out a scorecard before the House voted on that bill about a week or so ago. And they found effectively that they looked at a couple different scenarios. One was increasing the minimum wage to $12 an hour, and the other was to increase it to $15 an hour. With $12 an hour, they found almost no negative effects and entirely positive ones. $15 an hour actually increases the wages of about 17 million people across the country. And these are people either at minimum wage or just somewhat above it and getting their wages pushed up because of it. They estimate there'll be about 1.3 million jobs lost, however, with a $15 minimum wage. And that's essentially the result of them trying to sort of split the difference on a lot of economic studies. There are a lot of economic studies that see primarily positive results from a minimum wage, and a number of them that are more traditional and seeing more negative job losses or cutbacks in hours. There's not a lot actually in between. The CBO sort of tries to take sort of the median when they do their estimate.
We're talking with Dr. Dave Wells. He is the research director at the nonprofit Grand Canyon Institute based up in Phoenix. Getting back to Arizona, how does Arizona compare, Dave, to other states which have raised their wages in regards to employment and, if I don't know, maybe even suicide rates, if you have that kind of information?
Well, we don't have that kind of data, but I think it's a good sign, though, that Arizona is able to. What the minimum wage does is effectively helps redistribute incomes a little bit. So one of the things it does, now people on minimum wage are not exclusively people who are low income. There are people such as teenagers and some other folks who live in higher income households where they have multiple earners, and the minimum wage earner is only one of them. But overall, it has a general effect of making people who have lower incomes, including households in poverty, to have higher incomes. I think generally that's been a good policy overall, especially with the strong economy, because the economy by itself hasn't been enough to lift people out. And we don't have the strength of unions that we once had in this country that really helped sort of push up and encourage more stronger wage levels for folks. So I think the minimum wage has been a complementary policy in terms of trying to help folks at the lower end become more successful, be able to move more toward a living wage. And of course, our minimum wage also required sick days for employees, which is also very important for them, because I think that provides them the opportunity to be able to take care of their kid if their kid gets sick and not have to worry about losing their job. So it provides a little bit of that added security bonus for workers as well. So we haven't looked formally at what other states have, but I'm not finding any reports coming out that other states are having negative effects. Generally, it's been pretty positive.
All right, Dr. Dave Wells, appreciate the time. Dave, thank you very much.
Glad to join you.
The Grand Canyon Institute is a 501c. It's a nonprofit organization. It is a centrist think tank led by a bipartisan group of former Arizona lawmakers, economists, community leaders, and folks from the academic field. The Grand Canyon Institute serves as an independent voice reflecting a pragmatic approach to addressing economic, fiscal, budgetary, and taxation issues confronting Arizona. For more information, you can find what they're doing, more about them, at GrandCanyonInstitute.org. This portion of the Buckmaster Show, presented by our favorite bakery in town, it's Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch. They're open every day at 6:30, now doing a hot breakfast and a very good one at that. Full variety of items on the menu at breakfast and lunch. I do suggest a great sandwich for your lunch, and the bread came out of the oven just a couple of hours ago, I'm sure. Wide variety of breads to choose from. Check out Mona's, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Mona's, home of the Danish Kringle. They're at monasdanishbakery.com. Also a link on my website, buckmastershow.com. Shelley Fishman coming up next. Market's rather flat today, but Shelley's got some interesting things to say, as always, right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To sign up for RTA updates, visit rtamobility.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Shelley Fishman, CFP, is a financial planner and investment advisor professional. The opinions voiced on this program segment are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
And let's say we consult with Shelley Fishman, certified financial planner. Hey, Shelley, how are you?
I'm well today, Bill. The market is doing what the market does on Tuesday.
Yeah, it's usually going
down,
south
not
or
far,
not
really.
Too far.
Kind of flat today.
Yeah.
We have these countervailing pressures on the economy, and you would think that since the market is kind of factoring in at least a 0.25% decrease in interest rates announced tomorrow by the Fed, that would be good for stocks. But, you know, there's so much else going on. We had the release of the second quarter GDP growth numbers and some revisions of last year's numbers and the first quarter number. And that was about 132 news cycles ago on Friday. You know, it just seems like so much happens between mm-hmm. then and now that we've forgotten that the GDP results are typically a big deal when they get announced.
Mm-hmm. Sort of got lost in the radar, under the radar this time.
Well, you know, the news cycles just keep mm-hmm. on coming at us so fast, it's hard to keep track. But, and this is kind of important, the economy appears to be exactly on the trend line that it has been on all during the recovery that started in 2009-2010. We have growth that is centering right around 2.1-2.2%. We have some stimulus that caused a sugar high at the end of 2018 and the first quarter of 2019 this year. But in general, what's happened is that the economy seems to be wanting to grow at around 2%. And no matter what we do, it does not seem that we can affect that too much. We have some kind of nasty trade practices going on right now that are slowing things down a little bit, offset by the tax changes, especially the changes for businesses. And those things have combined to be about a net zero. So what we're seeing is we're back to around a 2% growth rate, which, by the way, ain't bad compared to the rest of the world, but it is somewhat lower than I think our politicians would like to have it or pretend that it is. And as a result, the headlines that came out of the announcements on Friday were that it was not necessarily good news for the Trump administration. And so Trump did what Trump does. We ginned up, you know, several other stories to distract us from the fact that we had an okay growth quarter.
Mm-hmm. Getting back to our lead interview today, and one thing you pointed this out during the break, kind of wish I had asked Dr. Wells about this up at the Grand Canyon Institute. What impact the raising the minimum wage will have on fast food restaurants that want to go automated?
Well, you know, you would think that the economic decision to invest in equipment rather than people would be driven by higher labor rates. And perhaps some of that is going on. What I can tell you is that the big name fast food firms, the usual suspects, McDonald's, Burger King, et cetera, have been automating throughout the world constantly. Mm-hmm. You also now see it in the big cities here in the U.S. When you walk into a McDonald's, pretty much if you're in San Francisco, New York, Los Angeles, et cetera, you're going to place your order in a kiosk.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a trend that we're seeing. Whether or not higher minimum wages are forcing that to happen faster, there doesn't seem to be any evidence that that's happening. But of course, what you'll hear from the management of those firms is that higher costs will drive us to make decisions that more quickly than we would have made those decisions in any case.
Mm-hmm. It is good, though, that we have not seen a job loss from the minimum wage.
What we're seeing, despite the fact that we're seeing these minimum wages, and you and I have talked about the income gap, and what we're seeing when we see the unemployment numbers and fairly decent wage increase numbers is those wage increase numbers are concentrated at the top end and at the lower end being pushed by minimum wage increases. But the middle class is not that affected by it. And that's one of the reasons I think we're seeing a disaffectation by people. When if this economy is so darn good, why aren't I doing any better?
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And that's a question that our politicians don't seem ready to deal with in any really effective way. There are some unintended consequences of raising minimum wages that you kind of scratch your head and go, oh, how did that happen? Mm-hmm. And your guest really kind of hinted at it a little bit. We're seeing recidivism rates in people who are released from prison go way down as a result of the fact that these people can now get fairly decent paying jobs that keep them from
turning back into a life of crime,
whatever they were in before.
Yeah.
The other thing is we're seeing that suicide rates, mostly from opioids,
I hadn't thought about that until Dr. Wells brought that up. That was very interesting.
People are being able to get jobs or at least being able to supplement their household incomes in such a way that they don't feel quite as desperate as they did before. Now, I don't think these are earth-shaking numbers, but they are at least coincident with the raise in minimum wages. And so if you can't make an argument for causality, you can certainly make an argument for coincidence.
So getting back to the Fed, they'll be doing the short-term interest rate decision officially tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So the market is kind of priced in a quarter point drop in the short-term rate. If the Fed succumbs to political pressure and drops that rate by half a point, I think you'll see a short-term spike in the market as a result
of
that.
Huh?
What most economists believe is that when you have unemployment where it is today and the economy chugging along at about where the economy should be chugging along, reducing interest rates is not a wise thing to do. That can cause dislocations in the bond market. It can cause dislocations in currency markets. However, there's significant political impact or political pressure on the Fed to at least give the president some of what he wants. And so the smart money is that there'll be a quarter point drop, and then the Fed will shut up for a couple of quarters.
But the next meeting is there's a fall meeting.
Oh, right? There's
but
there's
you think
a
that one
meeting
will...
in September, and then I think one in December.
You said that they would be basically in November. Be quiet, or as you put it, they will shut up.
Unless you see something dramatic happen in the economy that the Fed feels that it must step in to correct, they are very loath to do it. And remember, the Fed is worried about two things, that employment is kept at full employment rates, whatever you think those are, but generally somewhere, in the area of about 4%, and that inflation is kept to their target at 2%. Well, we're not meeting their inflation targets. The inflation rates have been generally below 2%. And the big fear that the Fed will have is that we slip into disinflation or deflation. And what we've learned from the Japanese the Japanese economy in the 80s and 90s, and some of what we've seen even in the U.S. economy, is that when you have deflation, it slows the economy down to the point that it almost is a direct precursor of recession. So the Fed is scared to death that by lowering interest rates, they will lower inflation even more, to the point that people begin to anticipate lower and lower prices, and they stop spending.
And then you hit zero, and then what do you do?
Well, we're not there yet.
No,
but that's the other problem is that if we do really begin to get into economic trouble, then if the interest rates are in the area of 1.5 or 2%, it doesn't give the Fed a lot of wiggle room, and without that ability to correct the economy that they think is needed, then they start doing. Committing unnatural acts.
Few tools left in the tool kit,
and one is printing money. And we saw that with the past recovery, and the Europeans are still doing it. The question that we don't know, of course, is what's the long-term effect of all these deficits and of all the additional money? Is it going to be inflationary? And when does that bill have to be paid?
All right, Shelley Fishman, Certified Financial Planner. You can find out more about Shelley at buckmastershow.com.
The opinions voiced in this program segment are for general information only and are not necessarily those of Securities America or this station. Shelley Fishman, CFP, is a financial planner and investment advisor in private practice here in Tucson. Securities offered through Securities America, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through PFG Advisors. Securities America and PFG Advisors are separate entities.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies, as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an Ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
This is Moa Mosgallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at mosgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Here we go. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster with you on 1030 The Voice, the source for trusted news talk here in Southern Arizona. This portion of our program presented by our friends over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. They would like to invite you, all of our Tucson, Southern Arizona listeners, to take about a three-hour drive to visit their area. And I think when you do visit, you're going to find an environment that it will be very much to your liking, especially in the summer, because the elevation's about 5,500 feet to about 7,000 feet. So bottom line, it's going to be cooler over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. So it's a great time of year to visit. Go to southwestnewmexico.org. There you will find all of the essential information you need for your road trip, where to stay, some great places in the Silver City area, and all of these great recreation opportunities. Well, it's hard to keep up with all the important issues relating to cybersecurity, but we will try to bring you up to date over the next 25 minutes or so with Tucson attorney Kathy Winger. Kathy specializes in cybersecurity issues from a perspective of a Tucson attorney. She's been very busy in all areas of the law over at least 20 years, right, Kathy?
That's correct, Bill.
Good to see you, Kathy Winger. Thanks for your return visit to our program and for your debut visit in our new studios. First time you've been in here?
It is the first time, and I have to say they're just lovely, and we have room on the table to spread out. It's just a luxury.
Yeah, and the last time you were with us, we were over in the linen closet.
Exactly.
We have so much to talk about, and of course, the big news today, 100 million Capital One customers were hacked. Let's begin with that. That's a big deal, Kathy. What were they able, or I guess the alleged person that's been arrested, I guess this was the work of one person.
It was, and this is kind of an unusual case in terms of data breaches and what happened and what continues to happen. And I will say a caveat to everything that I'm saying, since this information was just released by Capital One yesterday, it's still an investigation in progress as to what happened, how it happened. But from what I've been able to glean from the news reports, this was information that people had provided to Capital One when they applied for credit cards. The span of time that it covered, that the information covered, was 2005 to early 2019. The information that's been hacked or that was disclosed was names, addresses, dates of birth, income. There were some Social Security numbers and some bank account numbers for people who have secured credit card accounts. This information, this data was stored on the cloud. And the person who has been identified as the hacker is a former employee of Amazon Web Services, which manages the cloud. However, from what they've been able to tell thus far, the way that she was able to get into the information was due to a faulty firewall the part of Cap One. So, you know, when people hear the cloud, almost all of us store information on the cloud. So to hear that there's been a breach and it's information stored on the cloud is worrisome to everyone. But this still, at this point, looks to be have to do with Capital One's failure to maintain reasonable standards. If they have a firewall that can be breached, then that's a problem from their perspective. And it appears that that's how they got into the information on the cloud. Of course, Amazon Web Services is saying the cloud is secure, no need to worry. It didn't have anything to do with us. And so far, it looks like that's the case.
It's 140,000 customers that may have had social security numbers.
Correct. And that's a lot.
Taken.
That number, that's first of all, that came from a press release from Cap One. Mm-hmm. And it is a lot fewer than 100 million individuals whose information was breached. I suspect it's because there were applications and all of them may not have had the social security numbers on them.
Sure.
That information may not have been available. And as I said, it's an initial investigation. They may find out more as time goes on. They may find out more information that has been disclosed, including additional social security numbers and bank accounts. I will say on the other point about this breach that's different from ones that I've seen in the past is they found the person who got the information very, very quickly. Usually it takes a long time, if ever, if they find the hackers.
I wonder how they were able to do that. Maybe they had a source or somebody.
And she had made some posts on social media.
Wow.
There were questions. So they may have had a heads up or an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Capital One, it appears, they're saying, you know, they don't see this as a huge fraud risk because it wasn't a scheme of international hackers who are going to sell information on the dark web.
Mm-hmm.
This looks like a former employee who had a goal to breach it. And that's why it looks a little bit different than other big data breaches at this point.
But you talk about confidence in the American public. This is all coming 2 years after the Equifax thing and all the credit reports. And what was that? Up to 147 million people that were affected by that, the credit bureau reporting issue. It's almost like Americans have resigned themselves to the fact that my information's out there now in one form or another.
That's absolutely true. And I think what was particularly disturbing about the Equifax hack is Equifax is a company that people typically go to when they've already been the victim of a data breach to have their credit monitored.
Right.
That's one of the state-of-the-art, you know, items that victims of data breaches, are entitled to is credit monitoring. Equifax performs credit monitoring to let you know what's going on with your credit report. When the company performing the credit monitoring gets hacked, it's not surprising that people would be resigned to the fact that, you know, their information is out there and that they're likely to be the victims in one breach or another.
Then you have the Facebook settlement.
Yes. And with Facebook, and this is sort of and I mentioned this to you earlier when we were talking,
mm-hmm.
this is sort of a new approach to information and to the regulatory scheme in terms of information and people's information that I've been seeing. I've been seeing this recently. And the idea or the view is that you as a consumer, information that you share voluntarily online has value. And there's been a push in recent legislation and people talking about proposed legislation that actually talks about putting a numerical value on your information.
Mm.
Because the legal world, the legislative world, they're starting to realize that for companies, getting this information is something of value and they can do a lot with it.
Yeah.
And so the focus seems to be moving towards privacy and individuals' privacy. And you mentioned Facebook, and we had also talked about, and I wanted to mention, the Face app, which recently came out. It's been around for years and has done different things, but the most recent go-round with it was you could submit a photo,
yes.
and then they would show you what you would look like in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years.
For those of us of a certain age,
just look in the mirror.
Exactly, exactly. I had no desire
but I guess,
to see that picture.
Some of the younger folks wanted to see, gee, wonder what I'll look like when I get to be Bill Buckmaster's age or something like that.
Absolutely. So, yeah. So what happened, you submitted the photo with the FaceApp application, that your photo gets uploaded to their website, and then they use artificial intelligence to age you by however many years they've promised. Once that happened and they started coming out with the pictures, there were rumors circulating about what they were doing and what was happening.
The Russians suddenly own all of your...
Exactly, all of your photos, your everything photos, in the cloud. You've handed it over to Russia because it's a Russian company. Number one, security experts have looked into it. They don't have all of your photos. They have... Mm-hmm. They did... you uploaded one. Mm-hmm. The company says that they delete it within 48 hours. Mm-hmm. There's not really any way to confirm that. But they do have a procedure that you can go through in the app to have them delete your picture, to update your privacy settings.
Do they ask for consent before they do that?
I suspect, before they upload it, I suspect they do, or it may, and this really goes into the third issue with that. People were talking about you granted the company this license to do whatever they want with your photo forever. Mm-hmm. And the fact is you did. If you look at their terms of service, that's what you did. However, most photo application sites where you upload photos, including Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, they have similar terms of service. So you've already done that. Mm. And so I didn't do the app because I have no desire to see what I look like in 10, 20, or 30 years. So I don't know whether they required separate consent or whether it's already covered by Facebook's terms of service.
All right.
But the consent is there either way.
We'll have more with Kathy Winger, attorney, talking about cybersecurity. If you'd like to join in the conversation, if you have any questions about any of the topics we're talking about, 790-2040. Kathy would be happy to take your question. But before we do take the break, I want to remind everybody about Green Things. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. This is a great location over there just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. It's become a destination not only on their 13-acre site for every imaginable plant that you could want, but they're now home to Zocalo and all the great merchandise that they have. Much of this merchandise is beautifully hand-carved and crafted in Mexico and other areas of Latin America and Europe. So come tour the five shops at Zocalo Village on your next visit to Green Things. Their website, greenthingsaz.com. More with Kathy Winger on 1030, The Voice, your source for trusted news talk. When we continue.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
At Sierra Tucson, we see miracles of healing every day. We are honored to be an international premier treatment center right here in Southern Arizona. Our comprehensive evidence-based programs focus on addiction recovery, mood and anxiety disorders, trauma recovery, including PTSD, pain recovery, and co-occurring disorders. Learn more at sierratucson.com or call us at 800-842-4487. We work with most insurance payers.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, your source for trusted news talk. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with attorney Kathy Winger in studio. And Kathy specializes, she's a Tucson attorney who specializes in cybersecurity issues. Let's go right now to the live line. Roberta has a question about security with cell phones. That's a good question. Go ahead, Roberta.
Thank you. I recently started using an Apple iPhone with cloud. Is it secure, or do I have to do something to secure it?
An Apple iPhone. Go ahead, Kathy.
Well, the cloud is as secure as experts are able to make it at this point. So typically when you use the cloud, you have passwords, firewalls are set up, things are set up to protect your information on the cloud. At this point, you know, with the Cap 1 breach, it doesn't look like it was an issue with the cloud. It looks like it was an issue with Cap 1 and their firewall. So what that means is probably Cap 1 had a firewall that didn't function properly, that didn't do what it was supposed to do. Someone was able to get into it that way. So it doesn't directly implicate the cloud. But I think it's important to keep an eye on it. Any kinds of updates that you get from providers, from Apple, anything like that, implement those updates right away. Don't wait. Any warnings that you get, follow them. Because, you know, in the cybersecurity area, nothing is 100% secure. And people who have been doing cybersecurity for years, that's usually the first thing they will tell you. So nothing is 100%. You just have to make it as secure as you possibly can.
What does the recent settlement, the FTC Facebook settlement, mean for consumers, Kathy?
Well, what it means is, it means that it's important and it's time, if you haven't already done so, and this really goes to Alice's question too about the cell phone, for consumers to start thinking about the privacy of their information and the value of their information. What happened with the FTC settlement was Facebook violated a 2012 order that had to do with privacy, where they had told Facebook users that certain information was going to be protected and it wasn't. They violated that order, and the FTC came back and said, okay, now we're going to fine you. They imposed a fine that was the largest civil penalty by anyone anywhere in a privacy case, $5 billion. And they also said to Facebook, there are certain things you have to do when it comes to consumers' privacy, Facebook users' privacy. And Mark Zuckerberg used to be the person who made all the decisions concerning privacy with respect to the company. That's no more. Now there has to be a committee of the board of directors. There has to be an independent third-party assessor who evaluates it. And then every quarter, Mark Zuckerberg has to certify that Facebook is complying with those policies, and there are criminal and civil penalties, for failing to comply. How that affects consumers is What's recommended based on that settlement is for people who use Facebook. And when we think about Facebook, and I'm guilty of this as much as anyone else, we all share a ton of information on Facebook.
I do.
And we do it voluntarily. Yes. Nobody's forcing us. No. Nobody's compensating us for it. We are just handing over this information.
Yeah.
And what they recommend with respect to Facebook is to revisit what your privacy settings are on your Facebook
account.
That's
a good idea.
Because Facebook's going to be looking at those again, and they're going to be held, required to comply with them.
Mm-hmm.
So revisit that. And then, with the WhatsApp that we talked about, the Face app, and this applies to Facebook as well, experts will recommend that you be careful when you're sharing photos, because a big risk or a big area of discussion in terms of photos is artificial intelligence and its ability to read photos and to look at photos and to make things happen based on photos. Facebook already does that. It can look at a photo of someone that's in a picture with you and say, would you like to tag your friend Bill Cathy?
Yeah.
So that's already happening. But one of the recommendations that security experts throw out there is worry about all photo sharing applications equally. And it's the idea of thinking before you do it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you want to share this? Is it important enough? What's going to happen to it? And what privacy protections have you as a consumer demanded before you share that photo?
Mm-hmm.
And that really ties into what I said before the break about the changing view that now your information has value. There's going to be a dollar value placed on your information. So I recommend that consumers think of their information like that, that you're sharing something valuable with a company. How do you feel about that? Are you, do you feel like they're going to honor your wishes when it comes to the privacy of that information?
Now, for businesses, there's all sorts of Pandora's box has been open when it comes to this ransom that's being asked. And businesses, from what I'm hearing, some businesses pay it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I will tell you, in terms of business, because I'm a business attorney, that's really what started me. I looked at cybersecurity and I look at it from a business attorney's perspective. When I first started talking about cybersecurity, my intent was to let businesses know what they had to do to protect themselves, what kind of steps they had to take to manage the risk. And you're seeing with the breaches that we've talked about what happens when businesses don't take those steps. When I talked about the firewall with Cap One, that's something that a business is supposed to do, have firewalls that work and that keep hackers out. A failure to do that is a failure to act reasonably and exposes the business owner to liability. Equifax, that huge breach from a few years ago, it turned out they didn't update their software, their malicious software. They failed to implement this update, and that was the reason that the hack was able to happen. Again, that's another thing, that's a basic thing that business owners can do to protect themselves. If you've gone to the trouble of purchasing, software, malware to protect you from malware, and you get a notice from the company saying that it needs to be updated, update it.
That's sort of
just simple. So that's the Pandora's box that exists with companies. Going forward, where I really see it opening up, and I see that, I have concerns for my clients, I have concerns for any business that collects information, is this view that you've gotten something of value from consumers. And what are you doing with that? What value are you putting on it? Consumers have specific rights to that information. I keep an eye on new legislation that's coming out. And there was legislation in the European Union, GDPR, that applies to plenty of companies in the United States, even though it protects EU citizens, and that recognizes that consumers have rights with respect to their information. They can demand, they call it a right of erasure. Consumers can demand that information that they previously be provided to you, that you erase it, you make it go away and not have it in your possession, and you as a business have to confirm that you've done that. So there's these new rights that businesses are going to have to honor. California has a new data privacy statute that goes even further than GDPR and has more of an extensive covering than GDPR, and that recognizes those consumer rights. I just read the other day about a New York statute that's being considered. So from businesses' perspectives, they not only have to worry, as they've had to from the beginning of these data breaches, worry about whether they're taking reasonable steps to protect information. Now they have to look at the other side and say, can I comply with these obligations that I have to protect the privacy of the consumer's information? Even though the consumer voluntarily gave me that information, there was no deal that I would pay them for it. Now I have obligations that arise from that. And I see that happening going forward.
Only a minute to go with Kathy Winger. Let's everybody, though, take a moment when they're thinking about passwords. Change those passwords regularly, right, Kathy?
Absolutely.
Not only on Facebook, but really all of your sites.
Absolutely.
Amazon, everybody you do business with.
And I would encourage people, that the cybersecurity people who I talk to on a daily basis, talk about password strategies in terms of, you know, the type of password that you choose. They can look at passwords and say, it would take a hacker 30 minutes to figure that password out versus 30 days to figure that password out. So you want, you want to look into what's a useful password, and there are places where you can store passwords. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all kinds of things that you can do, but that's an easy, sort of straightforward step that consumers can take.
Where can people find you, Kathy?
They can find me here in Tucson, Arizona.
There you go.
They can call me. My number's 521-391-4475. They can email me at Kathy@kdwinger.com, or they can check my website, which is kdwinger.com. I also am on Twitter, Kathy D. Winger, and I try to keep people as up to date as I can about what's happening in terms of data breaches, both from the consumer's perspective.
Facebook as well.
That's correct. Kathy Delaney Winger on Facebook.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thanks,
always a pleasure.
Phil.
That's going to do it. On behalf of Kathy Winger, I'm Bill Buckmaster, and John Couch on the other side of the glass. We hope you have a great afternoon and evening.